Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Four's up. It's the fourth quarter here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and we've been reacting to the news all show long that Sean Payton is stepping down as New Orleans Saints head coach. We're going to get back to that and back to your calls reacting to it in a little bit on the CNG hotline. But right now, I have to give Mike Golic Jr. the floor because it is Tuesday here on CNG, and that means we got to do top five, bottom five. I did the top five earlier in the show, and now it's time to go into the gutter with Gojo for the bottom five from the divisional round. Gojo,
which
it's all you.
Great.
Breaks a tackle at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown.
What player was not?
Does he hang on? Intercepted. He couldn't hang on.
This is the NFL top five, bottom five.
Number five.
All right, guys, let's get this thing going. The bottom five from the NFL weekend that was starts with number five. And Chris, we have talked so glowingly about Joe Burrow, the performance he gave the Cincinnati Bengals, a team who sacked him 9 times and still had to watch their football team lose the game. Why? Because Ryan Tannehill decided to just have his worst day at the worst time. After going the back half of the season largely refusing to turn the ball over at all, he decided to get them all out in one game here, Chris. 3 interceptions, including one to begin the game before we had even warmed up as viewers and started going things. He had given the ball to the Cincinnati Bengals. And then certainly on the final play that ended the Tennessee Titans' offensive day there, throws the interceptions that sets up the opportunity for the Bengals to go out there and be one of the other games to win as time expires on a game-winning field goal. Just an inexcusable performance for a team and a defense that had given so much that day.
Yeah, Gojo, I just try to go through the 3 interceptions that Ryan Tannehill threw. Like, the first one on the first play of the game, the first throw that he had in the second half, and then, of course, the last throw that he had in the game. And I'm trying to determine which one was the worst of the three. And I got to say, that last one is just inexcusable, man. To jam that football into triple coverage, knowing that if you punt the ball, at worst, you're going to end up in overtime, I just don't understand the logic, and you should know better as a veteran quarterback, but clearly Ryan Tannehill doesn't. And the only thing I can think about when I see that performance from Ryan Tannehill is that if you're Aaron Rodgers and you have a chance to go to the Indianapolis Colts, you absolutely got to take advantage of it, because that is the quarterback that you got to go through in order to win the division and get to the playoffs. That's it. That ain't a high bar to clear. I'm just saying, if A-Rod doesn't want to be in Green Bay, feels like Indy could be the spot.
That is certainly something we're going to keep exploring and keep saying out loud on this show, because it feels too good to be true. In the meantime, let's keep moving to number four.
Number four.
Chris, you and I both talked about it Monday, coming right off of this one. Todd Bowles is an outstanding defensive coordinator, an outstanding football coach, a guy who is going to continue to get interviewed for NFL head coaching jobs. But I have to imagine in a moment deep down in places he won't talk about at parties, he would like to have one callback in particular. The Cooper Kupp bomb from Matthew Stafford's a play that's going to live famously on the other side as Matthew Stafford getting that monkey off his back. But Chris, for Todd Bowles to go out there and call a zero pressure in that spot to match Antoine Winfield Jr. up in coverage with Cooper Kupp on that play is one that left all of us with our heads scratching in that particular moment.
Yeah, that's the worst defensive play call that we've seen since Steve Spagnuolo's blitz call on 3rd and 27 against the Cincinnati Bengals. That was pretty awful. And you know that it was a bad call, Gojo, when in the post-game press conference, Matt Stafford and Cooper Kupp both admitted in a quiet moment after that play, they acknowledged the fact that it was a zero blitz that they were facing. Cooper Kupp is asking Matt Stafford, was that zero coverage? You're right, it was zero coverage. Couldn't believe it, too good to be true, took advantage of it, led to the Rams kicking the go-ahead field goal and winning that football game. That is one that Todd Bowles would love to have back. Clearly the wrong call in that situation.
Number three.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the bottom five from the wild NFL division round that was here. And Chris, we have already heard from Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott. He says that the 13 seconds remaining in their game have kept him up at night for the last couple of days here. He's thought a lot about that time in between. And Chris, the decision to not squib kick, to not do something to take added time off the clock, when the Buffalo Bills kicked off to the Kansas City Chiefs with that 13 seconds remaining. Instead, kicking it out of the back of the end zone, giving them the touchback and the full 13 seconds to work with on that drive. Chris, it was head-scratching. It was inexcusable. It was a moment that seemed to be lost in the middle of the fray of that game. 25 points scored combined in the last 2 minutes of that game, and a miss that probably cost them the trip to the AFC Championship.
Yeah, Gojo, this loss is one of those that you wonder whether or not the Bills are going to be able to get off the mat from. I know everybody is incredibly optimistic, and how could you not be after the performance that we saw from Josh Allen? But from a psyche standpoint, the team's overall mentality, I don't know that you ever get past a loss like this. I just don't. And if you look at the teams that have lost to the Kansas City Chiefs in the divisional round in years past, I mean, the Cleveland Browns, you saw what happened to them this year. And then the year before that, the Indianapolis Colts, you saw what happened with them. Andrew Luck ended up retiring. So I just don't know if this is going to be one of those losses that the team collectively says, we're right there, we're that close, and works even harder, or this is one of those losses where the team throws up their hands and it ends up splintering the group that you've already assembled. I don't know. The Buffalo Bills can go one of two ways. I'm betting with Josh Allen it's going to be the former and not the latter, but we'll see.
Number two.
Chris, there's no other way to say it. If we're going to talk about special teams, that conversation has to begin and end with Maurice Drayton's special teams unit for the Green Bay Packers, who had maybe the worst day. They came into this game, Chris, per Football Outsiders DVOA metric, their football efficiency metric, dead last in the NFL in special teams DVOA in that spot. And that showed up big time in a game where their defense went out there and handled their business. And instead we saw, I believe, just the third team in league history to give up a blocked punt and a blocked field goal in the same game, taking off points off the board and giving points to a struggling 49ers offense in that game. Chris, there was bad news on kickoff returns all game long. It was a nightmare from start to finish, and a full third of the game for the Green Bay Packers that ultimately, in addition to Aaron Rodgers' shortcomings, cost them this outing.
Gojo, you know the sound of a block kick is one of the worst sounds in all of football, if not all of sports. And so for Green Bay to be on the side of not one but two of those, that just makes it a lot harder to win. That increases your degree of difficulty in order to be able to win a playoff game against a live dog like the San Francisco 49ers. And the fact that most of the guys that make up your special teams units happen to be on the defensive end, it just gives me a sense of pride. So shout out to D'Amico Ryans for not only having the best defense on the field, but also having his guys contribute to the team's overall success. Because without that block punt return for a touchdown, there's no way that the 49ers find a way to win that game.
Number one,
the worst of what we saw this weekend by far, Chris, was not even one particular answer about this. The NFL overtime debate is just nauseating after a while. Immediately after one of the greatest games you or I or anyone else has ever seen, capping off maybe the best divisional round in NFL league history. It's probably prisoner of the moment, but man, three games decided by field goals at the end of the regulation. The best game, the crown jewel of the weekend, putting up 25 points in the final 2 minutes and being decided in overtime. Yeah, we can all have ways we hope it could be better, but the fact that that took up so much airspace over a game that was that great, Chris, that debate is one of those when we talk about the Sports Talk greatest hits, it's going to be up there, but man, oh man, it stinks on ice.
Yeah, but that's a debate that's led by fans and the media. You know that the players in the locker room don't feel the same way. And, you know, it's up to us. We want to make sure that we don't allow the game to be decided by a coin toss or by the officials. And unfortunately, the Buffalo Bills did not take fate into their own hands, and that's why they ended up on the losing side of things. But, Gojo, when you hear the arguments about the overtime rules, they say it's unfair that Josh Allen didn't get a chance to touch it in overtime. It made me think back to one of your favorite sayings. Fair is a place where they judge pigs at. It's not on an NFL field. That's just the reality of it, so get over it. It was fair in that the Buffalo Bills should have used better strategy, better execution in the final 14 seconds of that game, and they wouldn't have found themselves on the losing side of it.
Couldn't have said it better myself. God, so proud around here. That is the bottom five from the NFL weekend that was. You can hear more about that and everything else tuning into the ESPN Daily podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Supercuts, download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Might be a special appearance about a very special aspect of football with yours truly coming up on the ESPN Daily very, very soon. But coming up next, if we're going to talk about Sports Talk's greatest hits, we got to pay homage to a legend. A Hall of Fame topic for a player who will ultimately be left out of the Hall of Fame. Next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Twitter at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, today is a big day in the baseball world because we have the Baseball Writers of America voting on potential Hall of Famers, guys that are going to be enshrined in Cooperstown later this summer. And we've got a couple of prominent names that are on the list that have been waiting for a while now to be enshrined, Curt Schilling among Roger Clemens and then Barry Bonds. And then, of course, first time on the ballot, Alex Rodriguez, as well as David Ortiz. So people are paying attention to this vote and seeing who's going to be enshrined. And everybody's got a lot of excitement about it. But there's also a lot of, I don't know, I guess you would have to say mixed feelings about it because you do have a couple of guys that have been, you know, admitted PED users in all of this that are debating whether or not they should deserve the opportunity to be enshrined in Cooperstown.
Yeah, this is always going to center around, really, Barry Bonds, Curt Schilling, a handful of others who have been at the helm of this conversation. And Chris, as we now see the news trickling out here of this Major League Baseball class, where, remember, we were also getting Alex Rodriguez for the first time on the ballot here, David Ortiz becomes the only member elected to the Hall of Fame in this class. Big Poppy received 77.9% of the vote in his first year on the ballot. And Chris, it just goes to underscore how ridiculous this entire case is. Because David Ortiz, statistically, looking at some of the other guys that we are talking about leaving out here, does not hold a candle to what Barry Bonds, Curt Schilling, and others managed to do during their career. Poppy was great in the postseason. He did it in a lot of big-time moments here. He's one of the greatest clutch hitters we've seen come up in the postseason. But my God, the fact that this is now thwarted, the fact that we have gotten, I get it, there are six criteria you vote on, the character clause is a part of what you look at in all this, but my God, as Jeff Passan said right here, Jeff Passan, our ESPN NFL insider, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Curt Schilling were not chosen for the Hall of Fame in their 10th and final year on the writer's ballot. They're expected to be on the Today's Game ballot that comes up in December. But I saw Jeff's article on ESPN.com, Chris, and it's a joke. And we've been saying it's a joke, and it hasn't done anything, and it hasn't changed anything. Everyone's dug in on this. But it's completely and utterly ridiculous that we're talking about now, having to wait for some other outside committee to go and do what the writers should have done.
Yeah, I don't understand why the writers want to choose this opportunity to have an axe to grind with guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and even Curt Schilling to a lesser extent. But when you talk about the greatest hitter or one of the greatest hitters to have ever played in the game, and Tim Kirkson, our very own Tim Kirkson, said it. He said, under Ted Williams and Babe Ruth, Barry Bonds is the greatest hitter the game of baseball has ever seen. He's the current home run king, whether folks want to acknowledge it or not. He passed Hank Aaron. The reality is, this guy was as dynamic an offensive player as the game of baseball has ever seen. Like, we're talking about over 500 home runs, over 500 stolen bases. There's nobody else that's in that club. He's the charter member and loan member of that 500 and 500 club career. So I don't understand why people why the writers are not going to put Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame when clearly you can't tell the story of baseball during the era that he played without him. It just doesn't make sense. Same goes for Roger Clemens, one of the greatest pitchers the game of baseball has ever seen. And so to allow David Ortiz in, somebody that's been linked to PEDs, to be in on the first ballot, it just seems like a little bit of hypocrisy going on when it comes to the Baseball Writers Association of America. I don't understand how you do that. We'll see how they handle other guys. Alex Rodriguez is up. We'll see how they handle him moving forward. But to put David Ortiz in and not have Barry Bonds in is just something I can't wrap my mind around.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. It's a joke, Chris, that the likability politics get into all this, because that's what it comes down to. Even Curt Schilling, Curt Schilling's not getting in because things he said post-playing career, the things that he's tweeted, and a ton of it, gross, things that we could never condone on all this. But it doesn't change the fact of what the guy did as a baseball player. Like you said, the Hall of Fames in every sport are littered with bad dudes. Just straight up bad guys who have done things that none of us would ever defend on here. We saw this happen, though, the other year. Like, David Ortiz is also a guy that everybody loves. Super likable, the way he dealt with the media and everybody else here. We saw the Pro Football Hall of Fame do this with T.O., keeping him out of there early on in his tenure on the ballots for the Hall of Fame here because he wasn't a guy that the media liked dealing with because he didn't always treat them the way they felt like they wanted to. And it's a joke. Like, for these obviously great figures to be held out of this because Barry Bonds wasn't some cuddly figure that you enjoyed dealing with, while we got Bud Selig in the Hall of Fame who's presided over the steroid era in baseball. Like, Chris, I grew up. You were an adult at that point. I was growing up in my foundational years watching baseball with Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and Barry Bonds bashing home runs at a rate that we hadn't seen. And you couldn't tell me the powers that be in baseball looked at that situation and said, oh yeah, this all appears to be being done naturally with these guys' normal off-season strength and conditioning regimens. But they were perfectly content to bleed the popularity off of it, to get all the money that came from that, and now to be able to turn a blind eye on it here and now is just a convenient joke.
Yeah, and them keeping Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens out of the Hall of Fame is retroactively imposing some kind of punishment, where Major League Baseball, under Bud Selig's leadership, didn't have a test in place to be able to catch these PED abusers. They didn't. They were complicit in it. You talked about the home run race between McGwire and Sammy Sosa. I mean, they actually had in the Cardinal Stadium, they had Big Mac Land, and where he was hitting home runs at. I mean, the Major League Baseball monetized this. Guys hitting home runs, a lot of offense, because they were struggling to find their footing amongst the landscape of North American sports with football and basketball surging in popularity. So this is something that made baseball relevant again. And so you had an opportunity to take advantage of it from a revenue standpoint, but now you want to punish the guys that were really the catalyst behind baseball being able to have that jump in terms of popularity and entertainment value. So I don't get it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If you want to enshrine those guys and put an asterisk on their plaque and talk about the connection or the link to PEDs, so be it. But the fact that it's got to be a today's game ballot in order for these guys to get voted in, I think is absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. There's no excuse for it. I get that it's hard from a moral standpoint, but this is something that's a responsibility of the writers that do have a vote. And if you're going to preserve the history of the game, then you have to talk about the steroid era. And, of course, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are front and center in that.
I get I'm an outsider coming into this. I get that as a football guy, I don't treat numbers and the hallowed ground the same way that baseball does with all of theirs in this. And
but baseball didn't do it, Gojo. But baseball itself didn't do that. So what gives the writers the right to do that if the sport itself didn't do it?
It is some high and mighty, sanctimonious you-know-what. And it's the reason why today only David Ortiz is selected in this year's Major League Baseball Hall of Fame class with 77.9% of the vote. We'll continue to cover the hell out of that. I'm sure we will hear from Tim Kirchen, a very ticked off Jeff Passan, who wrote well about this on ESPN.com. Make sure you check that out. But again, that's Major League Baseball's business. Coming up next, we will get back to the NFL business here. Sean Payton stepping down as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints today. Will we see him coaching in the NFL again? And how soon? We will talk with someone who went toe-to-toe with Sean on the biggest stage. We'll do that at next year, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Twitter at Mike Golic Jr. at Chris Canty 99. We've been reacting to the news all show long on Sean Payton, New Orleans Saints head coach, stepping down from his role. He's stepping away from it right now. He said that he could see himself in the NFL coaching at some point again, but his heart is just not in it right now, and it's not going to be in 2022, Gojo. So your thoughts on Sean Payton stepping away from the Saints?
Yeah, listen, certainly a little stunned. We had heard this building momentum. Their owner, Gail Benson, had come out the other day and said Sean Payton had not told them about his future yet. He was away on a week's vacation and would get everyone up to speed when he got back. I just didn't realize it would happen this quickly. But, Chris, the more we looked at the picture, almost $75 million over the cap, down your Hall of Fame quarterback with a quarterback room full of options, none of whom it's really panned out this season. And you could see why Sean Payton, after also back-to-back pandemic seasons, probably was exhausted and looked at this task as even too daunting for someone with his ability.
Yeah, but you know what? And I just don't want to boil it all down to what the current state of the franchise is, because, you know, this coaching profession takes a whole lot out of you. And I think an understated part of it is the COVID-impacted seasons. And we go back to that game earlier in the year where they had the Carolina Panthers. They were missing eight coaches that were on their staff. So Sean Payton's in a position where he's got to MacGyver that thing from a distance and try to field a coaching staff as well as a team that had some guys out due to injury and some guys that were on the COVID reserve list. So it's a situation where those COVID years feel like dog years to a coach, and I can understand Sean Payton being a little burned out and wanting to take a step back from it. And I say that we should have known that this was on the horizon, because when owner Gail Benson comes out and says she's uncertain about her head coach's future, we saw that Sean Payton was down there at the facility meeting with Mickey Loomis yesterday, and we didn't get any more information out of that post-meeting. I just thought that there was the potential for Sean Payton to be walking away from it, and that's exactly what we got.
Yeah, Chris, it's a great note. And, like, again, 16 years there. Like, to stay anywhere for that long, to go through everything that he was a part of in his Saints tenure there. We talked to Ryan Clark earlier, our ESPN NFL analyst. If you missed any of that, Ryan Clark is a New Orleans, a Louisiana native, and a guy who understands what that place went through during Katrina, what Sean Payton and the Saints teams were a part of there. But, like, Chris, I mean, just looking back, even at this season, and kind of appreciating, because we've talked about Tom Brady, who is walking, you know, mulling over his future right now, coming off of statistically one of his better seasons of recent memory. Sean Payton, with three games to go in the season, had the Saints within shouting distance as a potential wild card team in the NFC playoffs, having played Jameis Winston to start the season, Taysom Hill at certain points in the season, Trevor Siemian at quarterback, and then his rookie fourth-round draft pick in Ian Book during all of this. You had all of that quarterback volatility in the season, and that team still, with three games left in the year, had a very real path to the postseason in a way that would not be possible for many.
Yeah, and you still had a winning record, which is more than you can say for a lot of other coaches given those set of circumstances. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. Sean Payton is one of the best coaches out there in the National Football League. He is fourth among active coaches with wins, and most would consider him a top two offensive mind in the game today. So, I mean, in terms of his ability to actually do the job, there's no question about it. And, Gojo, the thing that makes me feel like Sean Payton is going to return to the NFL in the foreseeable future is his age. He's only 58 years old, man. A lot of these coaches coach into their late 60s, some in their early 70s. I could absolutely see a scenario where Sean Payton takes a gap year and decides he's going to come back to the NFL as a head coach in 2023, given a job opportunity that's amenable to him, a situation where a team is ready to contend. But I could absolutely see those set of circumstances. What I can't see is the NFL not seeing Sean Payton wearing a headset on the sideline as a head coach ever again. I just don't think that that's going to happen. We're going to get Sean Payton back on the sideline. It's just a matter of if and where, not a matter of whether it is ever going to happen.
Ken Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. This was Sean Payton from his hour-and-a-half-long press conference announcing his retirement, at least for now, earlier today. This is him talking about that, the decision and his future in coaching.
I don't like the word retirement. Mr. B didn't like it either. He always said, you know, retirement's overrated. We get sold this whole image of retirement by these investment groups on TV and golf courses and retirement, and so I still have a vision for doing things in football, and I'll be honest with you, that might be coaching again at some point. I don't think it's this year. I think maybe in the future, but that's not where my heart is right now. It's not at all.
That, by the way, Mr. B, the late Tom Benson, the former owner of the team there, the husband of Gail Benson, who's the current owner, that he referenced during the course of this today. And so that really clearly is it there, right? And Chris, I did two stints in the offseason program. I didn't have some long career with the Saints, but man, you see on a day-to-day basis down there very quickly the kind of competitor Sean Payton is. I mean, hell, we did a damned CrossFit test for our conditioning test in training camp because that was the kind of workout Sean Payton liked doing. You'd see him in the indoor for the Saints facility over there pushing the damn sled, doing all that himself. In every way, that's a dude that's attacked the day and it's attacked this job and done it at a high level for too long to be done with it, especially knowing with his ability, we see plenty of coaches go and do that sort of gap mode. I mean, hell, we're talking about it with Urban Meyer potentially going back to TV now. Herm Edwards, the current coach of the Arizona State Sun Devils, was with us at ESPN for a long time. The ones that have done it well for a long enough time are always going to have opportunities and doors open when they want to go back. Sean Payton knows he's going to be able to walk into a great gig in a year or two if he wants to do all that. And so I think it makes it a lot easier to say, I'm going to stop, almost like a rich high schooler coming out, going to take a gap year, going to go travel to Europe because mom and dad can afford to send me over there. And then when I want to come back, I'm going to get into Harvard or whatever the school they can get me into, putting their name on the side of a building here. This is the kind that Sean Payton's just actually earned because he was very good at coaching.
No doubt about it. And if you're Mike McCarthy, this has to be a very uncomfortable position that he's in going into 2022, because short of winning a Super Bowl, you know that Jerry Jones is probably going to be looking to upgrade. And Sean Payton represents a clear upgrade at the head coaching spot than anything that's on the Cowboys coaching staff right now. So Mike McCarthy might be a placeholder for Jerry Jones. It might not happen in 2022, but all bets are off when we start talking about 2023 after Sean Payton is taking a little bit of a breather. So I guess it'll have to be TBD. Mike McCarthy gets to rest easy for a little bit this offseason, but going into next year, I don't know that there's going to be a head coach on a hotter seat, because Jerry Jones does have eyes towards Sean Payton and knowing that that could potentially be available to him the following offseason.
That'll be what we try and all measure from here on out. The futures for guys like Sean Payton, going to be a Hall of Famer at head coach, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, all of that up in the air right now, making me feel pretty nostalgic, quite honestly. But coming up next, as we talk about long streaks and record, we'll get to a new high mark in one sport and a record holder in another sport that still is not being shown the respect that he deserves. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And Mike, we got to give a shout out to the guest that came on the show today. ESPN New Orleans Saints reporter Mike Triplett giving us the latest on Sean Payton stepping down as head coach. And then, of course, our very own ESPN NFL analyst and Louisiana native Ryan Clark for giving us his insights on the divisional round weekend, as well as the Saints' overall picture moving forward. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. But Gojo, we have now reached the portion of our show where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is Three and Out.
All right, Three and Out here on Canty and Golic Jr. We talked about it a little bit today, but Chris, Anthony Davis, after an MCL sprain that sidelined him for 17 games, cleared to return against the Nets tonight. We heard, courtesy of ESPN's Dave McMenamin, and according to his head coach Frank Vogel, that Anthony Davis is going to be in tonight. They're going to be cautious with his minutes, but Chris, this has to be the start of something resembling consistency for this Lakers team.
Yes, I hear you, Gojo, and I'm cautiously optimistic, but I just don't know how much I can trust Anthony Davis. As a matter of fact, during the break, I was more excited about you telling me Little Debbie was turning some of their cakes into ice cream than Anthony Davis coming back from the Lakers, just because I don't know what I'm going to get from Anthony Davis. I know what I'm going to get from Little Debbie cakes. I know it sounds crazy what I'm saying right now, but that's how I feel as a Lakers fan. I can't let my emotions go all over the place because Anthony Davis has been far too inconsistent since that bubble season. So I want to believe that AD coming back and playing a five is going to make a huge difference and vault the LA Lakers into the top five in the Western Conference standings. But for some reason, I just don't see that happening.
Chris, it's a fair point. It's completely unfair to compare him to the Little Debbie line of products, because you're right. Anthony Davis has let us down. Honey buns have never let us down. Swiss cake rolls and zebra cakes have never let us down and all that. So that's a standard that no man is probably going to meet. Assuredly not Anthony Davis, but hopefully something can help there. Maybe they get a little help defensively. They were ninth in defensive rating before he left, dropped all the way down into the low 20s now. So maybe this is the start of things getting better. It's going to start tonight against the Brooklyn Nets. We're looking forward to at least getting something back out there so we can find out about him, Russell Westbrook, and what the rest of this team's going to look like.
I will say this, Gojo. If they can't beat the Brooklyn Nets with no Kyrie Irving, no Kevin Durant, and no Joe Harris, If they can't beat them people, then I don't know what this Lakers team is going to do. I get it. With AD on the court with LeBron and Russell Westbrook, this team is 8-7, so one game over 500 as opposed to their current record, which is one game under 500. If you can't beat the Brooklyn Nets with them only having one of their big three and not having their sharpshooter in Joe Harris, then you have a serious problem, Frank Vogel. I don't think Frank Vogel is all the issues that's going on with the Lakers. He clearly isn't the solution either. But if they can't beat him, then this season ain't about the Lakers trying to contend for a title. This is more about LeBron trying to do everything he can to close the gap in points with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's it.
And we've already heard from him. He's saying, hey, man, this is some of the best scoring I've done in my career. The rest of y'all suckers might need this. I'm good on this side. I got mine. That's what's going on in the NBA tonight. Major League Baseball did the thing again for the 10th and final time now, the 10th and final ballot before this goes to other committees that will have their opportunity with this. Major League Baseball has decided that only David Ortiz will be inducted as a Baseball Hall of Famer in this class. He gets 77.9% of the vote in his first year on the ballot, Chris. Meanwhile, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Curt Schilling, for the final time, left off of this. In some cases, in the former two, their ties to the steroid era in Major League Baseball. For the latter, and Curt Schilling, the way that he's conducted and said things publicly in his post-playing career, Chris, all of it's a bunch of garbage. I cannot believe that some of the best names of baseball, the faces of my childhood in this sport, are going to be left out because some people want to choose to be inconsistently sanctimonious when it comes to their morality clause in voting for this.
Yeah, and the problem that I have with all of it, Gojo, is that baseball was complicit in allowing these players to abuse performance-enhancing drugs. They turned a blind eye to it. Bud Selig and company didn't want to know what was going on because they recognized the end results, which is a lot of guys hitting baseballs really, really far, creating astronomical home run totals, and then people tuning in to see whether or not guys were going to eclipse Roger Maris's record of 61. And baseball wanted to continue that. That was the thing that made the sport relevant in the 2000s. And so now you're talking about retroactively imposing some form of discipline on some of the greatest players the game has ever seen in the interest of trying to keep some type of moral integrity over Cooperstown, a museum that's already got guys that would be outside of the morality that we would consider acceptable in our society. So I just don't understand why Major League Baseball and the Baseball Writers Association of America are choosing to keep Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, and Curt Schilling out when they're clearly players based on their resume that deserve to be in.
Because they didn't like him. Because ultimately, this has come down to way too much likability politics and all this. And it's a joke.
Yeah,
it's
but they're saying that PEDs is the reason why. And we know Big Poppy was linked to PEDs. And yet, he's in the Hall of Fame on his first ballot. It's absolutely ridiculous.
That is what Major League Baseball's done to itself. It went from a sport that was cutting into those. Broadcasts were being cut into for the home run race that they were celebrating in that spot to something now that's trying to figure out a labor agreement just so people will talk about them for any other reason other than what we get to do. And a shame for David Ortiz, who's going to have his moment overshadowed by baseball writers' mistakes in these other areas. That is a joke here. Let's finish off on a positive note for our blood pressure here. Yeah! Drop the puck, baby! Because how about this? Philadelphia Flyers 35-year-old defenseman Keith Yandle tied the NHL Ironman record, appearing in his 964th straight regular season game this past week, Chris. An unbelievable accomplishment. When we talk about some of the all-time Ironman marks, hockey's always going to get an extra bonus for me because this is a true gladiator sport up there with football.
Yeah, it's a collision sport. Now, the collisions aren't as often as violent as we see in the National Football League, but hockey is about that life. Like, this is a sport where it's acceptable for guys to drop the sticks and the gloves and go at it with one another. So you got to have a lot of respect for that. Got to have a respect for Keith Yandle, one of the best to ever do it.
Tied the record from Doug Jarvis from 1975 to 87. He can break that mark and reestablish that record with 965, taking a shift against the Islanders coming up tonight. So that'll be an exciting moment for that. As someone gets celebrated for a record they accomplish. Huh, how about that, baseball writers? Coming up next here, I'm sure Spain and Fitz will have something to say for all of that next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.